AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world. Whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. Sally Wilson is a UK-based mixed media artist whose artwork has to be seen to be believed. This is the second part of our Needle Exchange, and in this conversation we talk about subjects including Sally's favourite band, favourite book, and an interesting fact that no one knows about her. But we also explore what it's like to be an art teacher, the value of that experience in shaping new creative minds, and also what life might have been like if she hadn't had the head injury that affected her so dramatically. Sally's a dynamic force. Her work is amazing. If you visit our YouTube channel, you'll be able to see more of it as you enjoy this interview. I love talking to her. I was so glad she took part in the prize and so glad that I got to meet her. If you enjoy the show, please share it with at least one person who you think would also get value from this. And if you enjoyed this episode, you might want to listen to our Kaz Holmes interview. Kaz is another artist who's fearless in her approach to mark making. Thanks for your time. I hope you enjoy the show. See you next time. So where's the trade-off then between, you know, like you get an idea in your head that you draw out and you create a sculpture, and at a certain point, like, because they say, don't they, the secret to art is to know when to stop. So at a certain point you must go, this piece is finished. Do you sometimes go, this piece is finished, still don't really like it? Or do you go, this, do you have to be happy with it to finish it?
Or do you then
take them apart and rend it?
If I'm really not happy with something, what I tend to do is when I've done a piece and I think it's at a certain state, usually like a through way or something like that. So I'm not looking at it particularly. I'm just, as I pass it, I glance at things. And over a period of time, when you're glancing at something over and over, things start to show if they're working or not. So it's like looking, it's like when you get a piece of work and you look in a mirror. I don't know if you've ever done that, but if you sort of pick a piece of work up and you stand with it in front of the mirror and it reverses it, that tells you usually if something works or not. If it still looks good in the mirror, it usually works. And in the same way, when I walk around and I've got a piece of work around me, after a week or two, I will then decide if it's working or if it isn't. If it isn't working, if it's workable, I will then go back to it and try to solve the issue I can see with it. If it then becomes a problem and I think I really can't stand that, then I will start to cut up. And sometimes I will take an area of it and reuse and develop of bits that then might be used in a new piece. It's harder with sculpture. If you sort of start to take things to bits in a sculpture, then obviously you're getting smaller and smaller with what you can use. But again, it's that I can't stand to have anything that doesn't fit how I would want it to look. And that's a big one. When I'm putting things into exhibitions, or it has to, at that period in time, I have to believe that it is good enough. I now look back and I see pieces, you know, I'm in my photo collection of my pieces is just enormous. And I look back at a lot of my older work now and I think, oh my God, what was I doing? But that, I know that is part of being an artist, or, you know, part of being a creator, is that that shows you've either improved or your ideas have developed. Hopefully that you've got better as well.
I think that's it. It's not quite the same, but I look back at early issues of my cross stitch magazine and I cringe a little bit because of the way I'm producing them now and the way I used to. But like you say, yeah. I think that's probably part of the process, and it's to not beat yourself up about what you've done in the past, isn't it? Just to know that you wouldn't be where you are now if you hadn't taken those steps in the first place.
Yeah, and I think you're right with that. I think you have to, at some point, you have to leave it, and you have to, you know, I come across old pieces of work and I think, oh my God, that's awful. And I'm having to now stop myself almost destroying the work, because I think, no, just, you know, that was when you had just come out of rehab, or you were at that stage of development, you know. And I suppose in a way they are. I'd quite like at some point to be able to have an exhibition that showed that almost. It's like that thing of from that step to that step where my work has developed, you know, because it definitely has. It's changed, you know, and my abilities have changed. So it'd be interesting, just for me even, to be able to see everything, you know, in one place where you get an idea of the work through those number of years.
Do you think you would have a sense of, had you not had the injury, you were making sculptures, you were making art, can you get a sense of where you might have ended up without the injury and how far away from that you are because of the injury? Because your work's incredible, and I feel like, to me, it seems like you would have ended up in this route anyway. I wonder what your take on that is.
I think I would have done eventually. I mean, the one thing, when I was teaching, I absolutely loved it. I just, the students that I taught were brilliant. The only thing that I always found really hard was the rules of, you know, doing the paperwork and all that. And I think there probably would have been a point where I would have had to get out of that scenario. At that time, I think before I had my head injury, I'd already dropped down to 4 days a week. And I think I would have had to have left teaching at some point. And in a weird way, the head injury, although traumatic at the time, was sort of really good for me. I know that sounds weird, but it made me have to reassess and rebuild, I suppose, rebuild my life. I love what I do. I don't always cope with it, you know. I don't really have it's not an everyday activity, particularly at the moment, but it's something that makes me buzz and makes me ultimately happy. It also drives me mad. There is a lot of swearing and a lot of frustrations, but the end result is that it's probably made me a better person as well.
I definitely get a feeling that the work that you're putting out there is work you have to make. There's such an expression to it. Sometimes you see people and you just see like the character that comes out and the kind of just it's like there's a sort of raw creativity. But like I say, I think that taps into your sculptural background, your understanding of construction, and so you're just willing to go and explore these unusual ways of communicating.
Yeah, I think my sort of in the art world, probably what I do is not really the correct way to do it. Most artists are designers or creative individuals have they create their own personality or technique or way that their work will look. So when you look at majority of the way people work, they you can usually spot it. You know, if you go on and you're looking at images, you can say that is so and so, that is, you know. And I think that's the one thing that I haven't really done. I haven't really gone down one road of thought, and that's partly, I think, because of my head injury. Because I can't concentrate for very long, I have to do all sorts of different things, and that came up. I remember entering the National Open Art Competition, and I entered it. I think I entered it 3 years running with different pieces. And every time I turned up with my piece, I remember turning up on one of the occasions and the lady said, "I recognise you." And I said, oh dear. And she said, and she looked at her list, she went, "Sally Wilson." And she said, "I didn't know this was your work." And I said, "All right." And she said, "But what you put in last year was totally different." And then, you know, and I thought, yeah, it is that thing that there is a, I know that what I do is everything is, I suppose, quite, I can see traits that are me in all of my work. But I suppose when you're putting in a flat work piece and it's a drawing, and then you put in a textile piece or you put in a sculpture. But for everyone else, it's like, you know, who are you?
Yeah, it feels like sometimes you get authors who write a lot of books about the same character. But it feels like with you, you write collections of short stories and they're just different topics each time.
Yeah, I think you're right with that. And I think I'm loath to go down one route. So, you know, I love wildlife, but I like looking at the way wildlife integrates with man-made. I occasionally obviously do the not particularly political, but things that are going on in the world today. I occasionally do that. And as I've said, not very successfully in terms of them being seen. Yeah, I take a subject or I take a place and then I run with that idea. And it, you know, I think the only thing I don't do very much of, I have done a little bit of it, I don't do very much people. And part of that is I sort of, how can I explain it? I've always found the sort of the people thing. When you're drawing and things like that, I think drawing it is maybe easier. Doing it in textiles, I've always found harder. And I don't want to almost go into what other people have done. So there's a lady who does very sort of, she uses stitches to create faces. I can't remember her name, but she's bloody brilliant. And I love her work. But I think, well, if I were to try that, I'm almost doing her work. So I don't want to do that. I've done caricatures, which, you know, probably in stitches.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Yeah, but actually doing, I did a couple of pieces about Piccadilly, I think it was. Shepherd's Bush. And I did some characters in that, but they were the most painstaking moments of my textile, you know. And I just thought, really, I don't really want to be doing this on a regular basis, you know. So,
yeah, are there? Going to change direction slightly. You were an art teacher for a very long time. Are there things that you taught your students, like truths, that still hold up to you now? Like, what if you had to say, here's my three most important art lessons, what would they be?
I'm a bit old-fashioned, so I think for me, drawing is a really big one, and I know that with technology and everything as it's gone, I think there is less emphasis on that. But I think being able to, everybody, when you talk to anybody and you say to them, do a drawing, and they always go, I can't draw. Everybody can draw. It doesn't matter what you draw. It doesn't matter how you do it. Drawing is a brilliant way to sort of get you to understand things. The other thing is, behind you, you have all your threads, colour combination. Learning about how colour works is, and it's one of the most basic things that anyone can learn. So like the colour circle, that sort of thing. So these are all practical things, I suppose. But then the third would be believe in yourself. And don't be knocked down by people. So I had quite a lot of students who had their own issues, either with life or with family life, or just they weren't what you'd call nice, quiet students. They were maybe off kilter because they were either struggling with their own issues or whatever. And quite a lot of the time, I would get a thing saying, this student is going to be excluded or whatever. And I used to think, this student is bloody brilliant, you know. And I'd have to go and talk to the upper people and say, I'm sorry, but I don't agree, you know. This, yes, they might be having social issues or whatever. And I would get the college to agree to allow them to do their art, but not be in the college. And those kids then went on and are now, because they were given a chance. And so I think my only thing is, don't let establishments or people who you know, are high and mighty, knock you down. As long as you've got the right, you know, as long as you have something in you that wants to be a good person, you've just got to keep searching for it, I suppose.
Yeah, I like that. It got me thinking, actually, that being an art teacher is quite unique, isn't it? Because you could be a maths teacher and you can teach people that maths works and the outcomes are the same, or you could be even a design teacher, like the construction of it. But because art is such a personal expression, you can teach the basics of illustration, color theory, construction, but I guess there's a certain point when you just have to nurture people and let them believe in themselves enough to put their stuff out there.
Yeah, I think you have to. I think the thing that's missed, particularly in art, is that you still have a process and you still have to learn how to develop and to be able to do things on your own. And I think when a lot of both students and parents and whoever, when kids start to do it, they just think that they're messing around, I suppose. Art is messing around. And actually, it you go through very structured ways of getting individuals to work through how they use the brain, how they develop what they've started with, how to work that into different materials, and then how to use all sorts of different techniques successfully. So it's quite an engrossing, an intense process. And I think that was probably one of the biggest things when I were teaching. I think students came in as well and thought, oh, I'm just going to be drawing, or I'm just going to be doing this, or, you know, and it's like any other subject. You have to go through quite intense processes. And that can be positive or negative for students. So some students work really well with it. Others, you have to find an alternative route to allow them, you know, to develop in the same way. And I suppose that's how I use it for me, is I use what I used to do with the students. The best thing about teaching for me was you sort of come from school and you do your degree and you come out, and then all of a sudden I was pushed back into something where I hadn't done for years. You know, I actually went in not through a teaching certificate. I actually went in raw with my degree. And then I was given a syllabus that I was going to teach. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, like, oh, you know. And so what I did, I actually then, I was going home and going, right, how do you do the colour circle? How do you do this? And so I was actually... I know it sounds silly, but you're actually having to remind yourself of the basics to then take that to them. And that's why I used to do a lot of artwork on my own as well, because it was like almost teaching myself. You know, I hadn't done things for so long. I started to do almost their course at home to remind myself.
Yeah. What other artists do you admire?
It's a difficult one because I don't tend to look. I do. You get things on Pinterest and all that, and I very rarely. I do look at different work, but when I was doing my degree, one of the things that we were taught was that you shouldn't. You should never be influenced by anybody else. And it became. Almost like a paranoia that you just do not look into people. But there are a few people who really sort of stand out for me. Robert Rauschenberg is a biggie for me. He sort of in probably in the last few years, he was an American artist who created these massive collages. Now I think he did screen printing, but when I started to do a lot of the pieces to do with architecture and the overlaying and sort of montaging drawings together, I really looked at his work as a starting point, because I'd never really done anything like that before. So I would say he's probably the major one. The other people were, I started going to textile shows, the one in Harrogate in particular. And the two people who really stood out for me were Jan Beeney and Jean Littlejohn. Because at that time they were, I think every year I went, there was something about them. And what I liked about them was the colour, the use of colour, and how they almost took away imagery. And they're actually probably the opposite of me in a lot of ways. But in my early pieces, I was learning to use colour, and I think they influenced that really, you know, a lot. Mm. And then I suppose one other that I've actually got a piece of, and again, it's completely different to my work, is Priscilla Jones. I don't know if you've heard of Priscilla. I actually met her at a trade, an art trade thing in York. And she creates, and I think she was the one who started off. I was trying to look her name up because I couldn't remember her name. And I look at it every day, her piece. And, you know, all the sort of teacup things where they do... I think she was the person who started it off, because when I met her, it must have been 15 years ago or more. And I met her at this exhibition, and I looked at her work and I thought, oh my God, that's superb. Textiles, putting, you know, fabrics on top of fabrics, bit of machine embroidery. And when I actually tried to look up her name, all these people came up, and I thought, they're not Priscilla Jones, you know. And it is that thing that people get an idea and they go, oh, we like that, you know. But I met her and she was absolutely lovely. And I just thought, yeah, sound lady, you know, trying to, like the rest of us, trying to get a footing in the textile world or the art world.
I remember once going to an exhibition of Miro's work. It was in North Carolina, which sounds very fancy, but... And I remember looking at some of his stuff and thinking a lot of it looked like, because it would be like sculptures put together with bits of cardboard and things. And it did look a little bit, I thought, GCSE art. But then I remembered, like, he was like the first person to do that. And that's where it becomes more profound, doesn't it? Because, like you say, with Priscilla's work, there are lots of memes that you can sort of see. You know, there's that French style. There's a bit of kind of watercolor. There's a bit of like the free machine kind of thing. And it's stuff that you've seen before. But then she was one of the outliers at the time to do it.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I went to see the Miro exhibition in... I think it was Barcelona, with
nice.
20 students. I have to say, I like you. After the visit, I wasn't a fan, I have to say, and yes, he was one of the ones that, you know, like the mobile. I forgot what they're called. He would have been, but even so, I still struggle with. It's funny, isn't it, how certain artists, I went to see again with, I think with student, no, I think it, when I was at college, went to see Van Gogh. And I had always, because I was sculpture based and that's what you learn, I'd never really been into paintings, never sort of, and I went to see this, we all went to see this Van Gogh. Oh my God. It is that thing that until you see a set of work, you never really know. You know, it's like the work, like David Hockney. If you see some of his work, you will really think, why do they rate him? And yet, but when you go and see an exhibition where you see all the drawings, all the, and you get that whole lifetime, I suppose, of experience, it blows your mind.
Do you know what's making me smile, Sally Wilson, is that's what people are going to say when they see all your work together. They ain't got a clue unless they look at the whole thing. I promise you. Yeah. It's like, you know, even just diving through your website, you're just like you said it, you're like, huh? Because it doesn't stack up all the variety that you produce.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a very good metaphor there. Let's do the big questions then. I'm going to posit that I think your favourite band could be the Arctic Monkeys.
All in one! I don't know if I can show you that. Arctic Monkeys.
She's holding it up. Very good.
Arctic Monkeys.
So have you got a favourite album?
Not really. I like their older things. I like their older stuff. I was very lucky that when I first met my other half, 6 months into the relationship, he bought me a trip to New York for something like 3 days. It were only short. And we went to see the Arctic Monkeys at, it was like almost like a warehouse cinema. It was like a little event.
Right.
Oh, my God. It makes me tingle thinking about it. It was one of the most amazing experiences. We were right. We went onto the top upper floor, so we were looking over the stage, and the I loved the music then, but then as they were playing, everybody on the floor, it were like mesmerizing. How they were moving to the music, and they were, you know, it was, and I still remember it now. It's just, oh gosh. I'm not as keen on their more recent work. But you see, I like punk music, and I liked a lot of the sort of very, I can't explain, it's got rhythm and a bit of beat to it. You know what I mean?
My wife got me into the Arctic Monkeys because they're definitely her favourite band. And we went to see them at Brixton, and it's one of the few times where I've been to a gig and recorded a thing. Because when they did I Bet That You Look Good on the Dance Floor, I recorded the whole of that because I do play it back from time to time because it is just so good. But also it's funny now when you think about their early albums and they're talking about like post-mix Lemonade and Riot Vans and stuff. And now they're talking about like space casinos and all of those sorts of things. You can definitely see Alex Turner's like gone off, hasn't he?
I was reading that the drummer has recently married a lady in America, and it your life goes on. It's like me with what my work does. Again, the Arctic Monkeys, they might not be for us or me what I would choose now to listen to, because it, I suppose in a way, the early music was my childhood. So I listen to those to those lyrics, and I go, I did that. That was me. That was, you know, and you have that recognition, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. And their new stuff's quite good for the sort of listening to in a car, weirdly. It's not very rocky, but it's kind of okay if you're on a car journey. Do you listen to music while you work?
Yeah, absolutely. I love, I have a lot of punk. I have one of my other favourite, and I have a speaker, and I what I do is I play everything on, is it random or mix or something like that. I don't listen to an album or whatever. And occasionally one of the Wall comes up, and it's really bizarre because the Wall is supposed to be listened to in its entirety, and it has like, it's got a story. Again, I love stories. It has a story that works through it. But I still like, when it comes up, I think, oh, my God, that is just the best album.
Do you have a favourite book?
I'm a bit funny with books. I used to be an avid reader. I used to be reading all the time. And then after my head injury, I struggled to follow. So I'll read something and then I come back the next day and I can't remember characters. At the beginning, I started to write down. I had a little list in my book and it would have the name and all that sort of thing. Every time I got to a different bit, I'd write it down. So then when I started the book again and I got to wherever, and it just became so hard. And I just thought, this doesn't work. So actually, weirdly enough, since for about last 18 years, I haven't really read at all. I had favourites. I suppose the one that sticks in my mind was always The Wasp Factory. Ian Banks was always one that I always, and I have probably authors that I used to just, every time a new thing came out, I'd have to buy it. So Joanna Harris, I used to love her work. Rosamund Lupton. But I think now, I bought Jack, because my mum's of the same name, I decided to buy Jacqueline Wilson's children's books. And I've been trying to read them because I thought, well, maybe just go back to, kids' books. And I have actually, I've read one, but I've got a set to read. But no, I actually think I just like pictures. So, so I have loads of sort. I like illustrations, and I like, but no, I don't. I would love to read, but I need to find a way to be able to do it.
Are there any like classic art books, like going back to being a teacher again? Are there any books that you'd say to your students, this is a book you should pay attention to?
Sure. They'd study unusual things. So animation, because a lot of my students loved animation, and quite a few of them went on to do studying it. I actually used to buy all the animation. So Aardman, which did, I think they did, I can't even remember what adverts they did for now. But so weirdly enough, I've actually got a stack of videos and no video player. And they're all really good videos. But, so yeah.
Do you have a favourite film?
I have probably a few, and I haven't watched them for years. My all-time one that really stands in my mind is Trainspotting. Love Trainspotting. Even took my mum to it. And I think her words were, it was interesting. I think the words were. I also like things like Snatch, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. Andy, when I first met him, he was a poster printer. He printed all the posters for the cinemas. And because he did that, he used to have a card which would allow him to go and see a film every week with somebody else. In the whole time he had that, we never went. And it's one of those bizarre things that, because we both said, well, we tend to fall asleep in films, So we were doing other things. We didn't want to go and see a film. I do struggle with that. It's the time, I think. It's like I watch something on telly, and within 10 minutes I've stood up and I've gone elsewhere. I've come back and it's gone to something else. I'm thinking, oh, I don't know what happened. My concentration is pretty poor.
Yeah. Okay, and then is there an interesting fact about you that nobody really knows?
I did think of something, but I've forgotten it. I do have one, but probably not very interesting. I think I've broken about 12 bones from childhood through. I was always an avid breaker of bones, doing all sorts of things, whereas my brother was always, he always used to have the cuts. So my poor mum has spent the whole of our childhoods literally taking us to hospital.
I'll take a bit of solace in that, because my oldest daughter, Flora, she's 6, and in February she went to her third gymnastic lesson and broke her arm.
Yeah. So,
and she's always like, we have a thing we call doink of the day, where she'll bounce off of something with her head or something or other. But she's an avid reader, and if she turns out to be half as creative as you do, that's a trade-off I'm willing to accept.
Well, thank you. To be honest, it was the active life that did it. Climbing trees, ponies, riding ponies, doing all sorts of probably mad things that ended up, gave my mum hell at the time.
If people want to check out your work, and I can't stress the value of that enough, where should they go?
Ooh, I think the main place is probably my website, which is sallywilson.co.uk. And through that, I do have a Pinterest account, which they can look at. I do have an Etsy shop, which I am appalling at. I set that up a while ago, and I've done very little with it. And then when orders have come in, I've panicked like crazy, because then I can't find the things, which I do send, by the way. If anyone buys anything, I do send it. But I need to sort that out. It's been, I think the hard, about 2 years ago, my brother had a severe accident, and he was left paraplegic. And he was a really active lad. He was a firefighter. And so he's now living at my mum's, and together, or as three of us, we are dealing with all the things that go with that. So I suppose everything that I would normally do, like the Etsy and etc., a sort of little bit greyed, I would say. But if anybody does want to get in touch with me, then if they contact me through my website, if anyone is interested in anything, just drop me a line. I think that's the best way to do it. I'm much better with email than anything else. And I do need to learn. I think that's one of the things. But it's, so far, it's not being a priority, I think the word is.
Yeah. People can get prints of your work from your Etsy store, knowing full well it might take a little while for them to... You probably just need an assistant. If you had an assistant, then you could go off and just keep making art pieces, and someone else could just keep reminding you to have a bit of lunch every now and again.
I'll tell you what, that would be lovely. That would be absolutely lovely. Because it is... it's one of those. I literally... What I need is a help dog that is capable of packing, labelling up. It can then walk me to the post box, and I'd love a dog. So there you go. That would be brilliant.
Sally, thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And what I would like to say is, obviously, I have been a little bit slow on my artwork for a little while due to circumstances, and this has been an absolute buzz, and hopefully it will kick me up the backside and get me back into gear. So thank you, Jamie. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.